This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
On being able to keep something quiet now for the last 2.5 years. We have yet to screw this up. Yeah, not one single time.
A lot of things go on at ACC Network, but when it comes to the awards, we're your one-stop shop. That's and right. Have been all week, and it's been our pleasure and an honor to announce the 2021 Atlantic Coast Conference Football Awards, and we got one left. And that one left is the ACC Coach of the Year. And it was a competitive thing this year. You had four teams had a chance to win 10 or more, right? You got all the opportunities out there. And two guys broke free. And they're the two squaring off in the championship game. But the 2021 Atlantic Coast Conference Coach of the Year is Dave Clawson of Wake Forest. He has led the Deacons to their second 10-win season in program history, their highest ever ranking in the Associated Press and College Football Playoff poll, and he's also led them to their first ACC championship game appearance in 15 years. Wake leads the ACC in points per game and in turnover margin. So our congratulations to Coach Dave, Coach Clawson and Pack. He finished ahead of Pat Narduzzi of Pittsburgh, Dave Dorn of NC State, Bronco Mendenhall, Scott Satterfield, and Dabo Swinney also received votes.
I saw the votes, and again, congratulations, Coach. We'll have him on here momentarily. Mm-hmm. But you know what shocked me with the voting? Again, I don't vote, so I can make this comment.
Okay.
Here are the numbers, all right, on the screen. Dave Clawson had 49 votes. Pat Narduzzi had 10. Dave Dorn had 2. Bronco got a vote. Satterfield got a vote. Swinney got a vote. Mm-hmm. I'm hard-pressed to believe that Bronco and Satterfield combined as many votes as Dave Dorn. That stuns me.
Yeah.
Dave Dorn did a heck of a job.
He did a heck of a job.
And yeah. You know, obviously, Pat doing his thing. He's back again in the ACC championship game. So you kind of expected that to be a 1-2. But Dave Dorn only getting 2 votes.
Yeah.
Again, from sitting on the couch, that number surprises me as much as the fact that Bronco and Satterfield got a vote. I would tell you Dabo Swinney, in some respects, might have done one of his best coaching jobs,
yep,
but not going to be the coach of the year.
No, you're right about that. So congratulations to Dave Clawson. Let's go to Winston-Salem. And Coach, congratulations, but we know this doesn't happen unless you're having a great season, right?
Yeah, and you don't have a great season unless your players buy in. And you know, this is a program award. I have a great staff, and our players bought in. And I also think it's a family award. My wife, Catherine, my daughter, Courtney, my son, Eric, are extremely helpful and supportive. And this is such a time-demanding profession that if you don't have a great family behind you, it's impossible. So I'm grateful to everyone. Again, my name's on the plaque, but clearly this is a program accomplishment.
Coach, ACC Championship game Saturday night. I know tickets are tough. You only got 6. is there a way you could get me and Mrs. P in the game? Any chance?
You got to go to Ticketmaster. We at Wake Forest, we have sold out every single ticket that we were allotted. And we went for the double allotment. We still sold them out. So Deacon Nation's going to be there in full force, just like they were for our last 2 home games that we sold it out, and just like they are for every bowl game we've been at, that I'm pretty sure we've outdrawn the other team for every bowl game that we've been to in my time here, and most of these schools have 5 and 10 times our enrollment.
Well, I kid around with that question, but I loved your response at the press conference because you were right on the money. But it is pretty cool, right? We've talked to a lot of your players during the course of the year, and they've talked about the relationship of, number one, a small enrollment, but that kind of is an advantageous deal, whether it's a celebration on the field, going to class, whatever. It just seems like Wake Forest right now is about as tight-knit of any school that I can think of as far as administration, coaches, players, the school, the city, the whole deal. It's really, really cool to see.
It's been awesome to be a part of it, and it really started with Ron Wellman and Nathan Hatch, our president, that hired me and our athletic director, and they made a commitment to football in terms of fundraising, facilities. They recognized the direction that college athletics was going and didn't want to be left behind. And that commitment's continued with John Curry and our new president, Susan Wente. Again, just it takes a whole community and a whole administration to have a good football program. And I'm fortunate to be at Wake Forest at a time that they've made those decisions, that they want to be good in football, with the caveat that it's done the right way, that we recruit student athletes that fit the school, that go to class, that graduate, that have high character. And that's where our student athletes deserve credit.
I want to, at some point, maybe after off-season recruiting, spring ball, spend some time about the long game that got you to the championship and, you know, potential double-figure wins, all the things that go into that. But for this year in particular, we spent some time yesterday talking about turning points in seasons for teams. In your mind, where was the turning point with this team?
I mean, I don't know if it's a turning point because there were so many close games, but, you know, I have a lot of respect for Bronco Mendenhall and the program he's beat at Virginia. And when we went up there earlier in the season and played Virginia at Virginia on a Friday night and, you know, won that game, I think our team at that point had a sense that, hey, we could be pretty good this year. Mm-hmm. And then we won a bunch of close games that, you know, if the ball bounces the other way, we're probably not as fortunate. But Nick Skiba hits a last-second field goal to beat Louisville, and Torian Perry makes an incredible catch in overtime to defeat Syracuse. And then our response to adversity, the loss to Carolina was painful, but we bounced back the next week to win a really great game against NC State and followed up a loss with Clemson with maybe our most complete performance of the year at BC. So there have been so many turning points this year, and you take any one of those games that we don't find a way to get it done, and we're not in Charlotte this weekend.
Coach, you know what's interesting? Your team offensively has been so consistently good, and you've got so many weapons. Hartman's been consistent. He gets the ball to your playmakers. Your offensive line's been good. The play calling's out of sight. But you know what? It was your defense last week at BC that impressed me the most. You mentioned coming off the Clemson game in which, guess what? You know what? They beat you. So now how are you going to respond? All the pressure. Wake's got to hold serve. And you won with defense, which I thought was fantastic. And, you know, Pitt did a great job, too, defensively against Sean Tucker in their last game. And we get into this championship game, and we think of Pitt and Wake Forest's offensive explosion. But it may come down to defensive stops Saturday night of who wins the ACC championship.
I agree. You know, you're not going to stop Kenny Pickett and Jordan Addison and the skilled players that they have. And so I think whatever football team can find ways of getting stops, and whether it's turnovers, third down stops, even in the red zone, you know, forcing a field goal, I think those, you know, those taking away those opportunities and preventing points is going to be huge. And I think Pitt has a really good defense. I mean, when you think of Pat Narduzzi, you think of a good defensive football coach, good defensive football. You know, Pitt's a very solid defense. I think they've outscored their opponents this year. It's like by 230 or 260 points. So they've got a very talented, very good defense that's well coached. So this will be one of our toughest challenges on offense and on defense. And guess what? You're in a championship game. What else do you think? You know, it's not going to ever be any other way if you're playing for a championship.
Well, it's been tremendous to watch you guys unfold this year, especially help with your visits last year, helping guide us through kind of what teams were facing trying to get through 2020. And I think the momentum and the stick-to-itiveness of 2020 kind of helped you in 2021. It's been very rewarding to see the Deacons make this journey. And we're excited for you to have that opportunity on Saturday night. And congratulations on being the Coach of the Year.
Well, thanks, and I really look forward to, now that we're on the road recruiting again, when the season's over, sometime in January, if it works out, I'd love to get together with you guys in Charlotte.
That'd be awesome.
Done deal. By the way, this is your 10th appearance on the show, and everybody that reaches double digits gets a free Packer and Durham mug, so that's coming your way as well.
Well, you know, whatever, for the brand or whatever it said.
That's it. There you go.
I'll have to have a different mug next time I'm on.
You take it. Care, Coach. Thanks.
Okay, thanks so much.
For the brand.
Packer and Durham mug, and he was really clearly engaged in the Packer and Durham mug.
Well, you know, he's
Jeff, we got any left, by the way, before you?
There's a couple. I got a couple up there.
With the letters on them and everything?
Yeah. Okay. I put the Packer and Durham ones, the first ones that came in here.
Yeah.
I put them in the dishwasher, and I got the letter C is left and maybe an R. That's all there's left.
The C in Packer and the R in Durham? That's it?
That's kind of how it works. And so now I got to hand wash them after you and Captain Ron and Robert drink all your coffee in the morning.
That's right.
And I'm over here with an ice cube. But, you know, so far we got Jeff Collins.
Yeah.
Has had 10 appearances.
Yeah.
Dave Doran, 10 appearances. And now Dave Clawson, 10 appearances. Those three gentlemen.
Those are the headline coaches?
That's it. Those are the dudes with 10.
They lead?
All time.
Oh, wow.
The only three double-digit coaches. Or anybody.
Anybody.
Collins.
Yeah.
Doran.
Yeah.
And the ACC Coach of the Year, Dave Clawson.
Congratulations to Dave Clawson, by the way.
Yeah. Well deserved.
And by the way, congratulations to Pat Narduzzi on a great year, Dave Doran on a great year. It's starting to matter, people. I'm telling you, it's starting to matter, isn't it, Pac?
Well, there's. I thought there were some great coaching jobs this
Absolutely.
Season, given what happened to your team, whether it be injuries or
yep.
slow starts or whatever the case may be. I mean, I think Mike Norvell did a brilliant job at 0-4.
Sure did.
Getting that thing going again. I thought Manny Diaz at 2-4, going nowhere fast with the way that schedule was going to lay out with NC State, Miami. I mean, Miami is going to play Pitt the week after that. That thing could have gone
yep.
south, and it didn't. So, again, there's a lot of good coaches in this league, but Dave Clawson, well-deserved, 10-win season. I know Pat Narduzzi with Pitt, first time they've won 10 since 1981. Those two have earned the right to play for a championship Saturday night here in Charlotte.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun ball game. We're excited to be able to preview for you this week all the elements about Pittsburgh and Wake Forest. And on the other side, hail to Pitt. Here comes Lewis Riddick. We're going to have to draw some lines, though. The emotion of being the proud football alum and the one of the premier football analysts, right? We got to kind of draw that line a little bit here. See if we can separate church and state with Lewis.
I don't think you have to. Like I keep telling you, if you got it, flaunt it. And Lewis can do it.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer in Durham
I'm
on a Thursday. Just a reminder, a Thursday. We got the press conference coming up, top of the hour.
Yeah, Brent Pry. Right,
that's it. Going to Blacksburg on that boy. Lugs is coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. But,
Blue Ostrich.
Yep.
But get him covered up. Yeah.
We're going a little hell to Pitt, though, right now.
Yeah, we are. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome NFL Monday Night Football analyst and one of the great all-time Pitt Panthers. And purveyor of a Tony Dorsett jersey because of Jackie Sherrill's failed recruiting visits to his Please welcome Lewis Riddick. Lewis, great to have you back on Packer and Durham. Thanks for the time, as always.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Jackie still hasn't gotten me that jersey. So, I mean, I don't even really know what to say about this anymore at this point, man. I just don't even know what to say. But it's Lewis, okay. I love Jack.
I kind of feel like the middleman here. I'm going to send him a text today because I know he listens to the radio show all the time. During the middle of a conversation, I'll get a text from Jackie. This guy doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, Pac. I mean, you know, it's typical Jackie Sherrill out of nowhere. It's like, you know, he's great.
Are you kidding?
Jackie's
one of the greats of all time, man. Yeah, he's one of the greats of all time. So I'm not mad at him.
No, not you can't be. You got to be really, really proud, right? I mean, this Pitt Panther football program, it runs deep with incredible names and championships. And the job that Pat has done, first time double-digit win since 1981. Mm-hmm. Kenny Pickett's a superstar. They got great talent all over the place. Alums have really, really got to feel great about where this program is right now.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Look, those teams of the late 70s, early 80s, when Marino was a freshman, I believe in 79, 80, 81, 82, that run right there, I'm very familiar with it because I was a kid who was going to those games at that time because my cousin Tim Lewis was in the same recruiting class as Danny was. And that's when Hugh Green and Ricky Jackson and Greg Moss and I mean, Bill Moss and Greg Meisner and Sal Cinceri, Carlton Williams and Jimbo Covert, Russ Grimm. I mean, it was this, you know, star after star after star, all pro, pro bowler. For them to win, they were winning 10 games in their sleep back then. And then They would always mess it up in terms of their national championship run and lose one game. For this Pitt Panther team, this current Pitt Panther team to win 10 games like those teams were then, and now have a legit Heisman Trophy candidate who should be invited to New York without any doubt in Kenny Pickett. Yeah, I mean, it makes all those guys who were kicking rear end back then and everybody in between kind of stick your chest out a little bit more and go, Pitt is back on the map. Pat has done a great job. I just need to keep it going, man. Just keep getting those recruits in there and keep developing them. Keep having those double-digit win seasons. It's awesome to watch.
Lewis, is it hard to separate? I jokingly said this going to break. Is it hard to separate the church and state when you look at Kenny Pickett as a Pitt alum and then Kenny Pickett, the Heisman candidate and potential first quarterback taken in the draft in April?
Of course, there's an emotional attachment. There's a personal investment simply because, I mean, you know how it is with alumni. That bond runs real deep. But I think this young man's story, mm-hmm. how he dedicated himself to a fifth year, the work that he put in, the advice he took from so many people, both inside the program and outside the program, in terms of, you know, addressing the things that he needed to address to take his game to another level so he can improve his draft stock and come back and help this football team. That's all a part of the story. Then to see it play itself out on the football field, for him to break the records of really one of the best pure passers that the game of football has ever seen in Dan Marino, to break all those records, to shatter those records, throw for 40 touchdowns, 4,000 plus yards, I mean, and 7 interceptions, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. So he deserves to be recognized as one of the premier players in this country. And I think once the draft rolls around, you're going to see that the NFL is going to value him as one of the premier players in this country. And he just needs to get to the right place with the right system, the right organizational structure and stability so he can go on and have a great pro career. I had a chance to talk to him just the other day, And he's as impressive of a young man as I've ever talked to. Of course, I'm a little bit biased, and, you know, and that's fine. You're supposed to be biased when you have the kind of connection that you have to players who wore the same colors that you wore. But this guy can stand on his own in a way that should make himself proud, make his family proud, definitely make the university proud, and make the nation proud. And that's why he deserves to be in New York.
Lou, in some ways, and Pac, I know we're looking forward to the visit on Saturday you had with Kenny on the huddle here on ACCN, but do you think his return to college football is a good thing for guys who are kind of that third day slot that potentially it could help other guys make that decision and then come back and play one more year in college now that they've seen the progress and the success he's had?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've got to really take all the information, objectively analyze it in terms of what your draft stock is going to be, and don't make emotional decisions if you can afford to do that. Look, some players may feel as though, hey, look, I just need to get out. I need to, you know, maybe my family situation is such that, you know, I just need to go ahead and move on and get a jump start on my career, and I can't afford to stay in college for a fifth year like Kenny was able to do. But I think if you know, all things being equal, if you're able to take advantage of a situation like he was able to take advantage of it and come back to a coaching staff, and in particular, look, Mark Whipple, their offensive coordinator there in Pittsburgh, who I know well, and you're able to be around a guy like that, a guy who's coached some of the greats, who's coached guys like Ben Roethlisberger, Donovan McNabb, and who's telling you, look, we can help you. We can help you improve your draft stock. You can win some games here, win a significant amount of games because we have a strong football team. You know, then you get the best of both worlds. The university gets you for another year. You improve your draft stock. You know, have another year to really just enjoy the college experience and continue to, you know, build those relationships and enjoy those relationships. And when you talk to Kenny, he's loved that part of it. He really enjoyed this year to be around his guys, help the team, help himself, break some records, and maybe now be one of those guys who goes from being a day three, maybe day two, to a possible top 10 pick. I mean, come on. That's the stuff dreams are made of, and I'm sure anybody would love to emulate that path, or rather follow that path and copy that path if they could make it work for them the way Kenny has made it work for him.
Lewis, you're the perfect guy to ask this question to. I'm going to tie the NFL and Pitt football together. Thank God for the Panthers, because the way the Steelers are playing, hey, up there in the Steel City, Man, they're used to championships. Pick and the boys came in town at the perfect time, the way the Steelers are playing.
Yeah, it's been a rough year for Mike Tomlin. I mean, they're an organization in transition right now for sure. The things that have been the hallmarks of that team, that have really been the foundations of that team and of that franchise, have just not been there for them really over the past 2 years, starting with the offensive line, the consistency of the running game, the physically dominant, you know, type of mentality and attitude that they've always had. It just has not been there. Ben Roethlisberger, we know that Ben's, you know, closer to the end than he is to the beginning, obviously. They're going to need to find out who their franchise quarterback is going forward. So that's a huge task in and of itself. You know, the defense has had to bear the brunt of, you know, the responsibility there to try and keep them in games. They're getting worn down too. So there's just a lot that's going on. And that happens to a lot of teams in the NFL. You try and stay out ahead of it, but it's caught up to them a little bit. They're going to have a lot of work to do this offseason. But this is a very, very proud franchise. When you go and watch them practice and watch them play, the Pittsburgh Steelers, look, the black and yellow is still something that kind of grabs your attention. It's still one of the pillar blue bloods in the NFL. They're just in a little bit of a downswing that they will bounce back at up, but they have a lot of work to do this offseason for sure. And you're right. Thank God for Pitt and the fact that they have had one of the best seasons they've had in the past 20, 30 years. And hopefully they can cap it off with a win here against Wake and then go on to a big-time New Year's Day bowl game and cap that off, too, with a win.
All right, I know you got a big AFC East game Monday night. I know it's Patriots-Bills, and you guys are weekend prep. I understand how the run-up works. But take me to Saturday night. How does this work for Lewis Riddick Saturday night? We got to get away from people and watch the game here. How does the emotion of this play out for you, man?
Yeah, I told Kenny Pickett when I talked to him the other day. I said, look, Saturday night I'll be bunkered up in my hotel room in Buffalo, and I'll be watching that game, man, because this is big time for them. To be outright ACC champions would be a huge, huge feather in their cap after a tremendous year. I'm not really one of those guys who has to be alone when I'm watching games. As a matter of fact, I mean, I can watch them by myself. I can watch them with people because I'm so dialed in. I don't care who's around me anyway. So there could be 100 people or no people. But the fact is, I'll probably be in my room just sitting there watching it and really just enjoying the fact that Pitt football is back on the map. You see here every time that I'm on TV, you see that helmet right here beside me. And that's mine. That's the one that I wore. I will always display that proudly. And I think, you know, our alumni base and our history as far as football is concerned is second to no one's in the history of college football. Right. And it's just going to be fun for all of us to watch this football team try and cap off a tremendous ACC season and then onward from there.
All right, so whether you're watching by yourself or with 1,000 other folks, are you one of these rah-rah guys? Like, will you be emotional, giving the Tiger Woods fist pump, you know, pointing at people, or are you still like Mr. Cool during the game? Just ask.
No, man. When it comes, you know how college football is, man. I mean, when it's your school, you know the attachment that you have to your school. Yeah, there'll be some choice words that I won't be able that I'll be able to say in private that I won't be able to say on TV. I mean, that's just how I get. I'm an emotional guy anyway, so yeah, there'll be plenty of that, man. There'll be a whole lot of that. I'll be fired up for this football team. Make no mistake about that.
All right, I'm going to follow through with Jackie Sherrill, see if we can't get you that jersey, that long-awaited jersey coming from Coach. We'll work on that.
Hey, you just make sure you tell Jackie I love him, man. I still can see that iconic yellow blazer of his walking up and down the sideline at Beaver Stadium at Penn State in 1979 and 80. That was the man now. Make no mistake about it. Jackie Sherrill was the man in college football at that time.
I tell you, the best news I've got of this whole deal is Saturday night, Lewis Riddick's not wearing the yellow helmet with the wide shoulder pads and the 5 jersey taking Levy and Greasy out in some banquet room. So there we go. Hey, Lou,
hey,
thanks.
If I could fit them onto my carry-on, I'd take them too.
Hey, appreciate the time as always. Be well.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Lewis Riddick, outstanding.
Lewis Riddick was great.
We got the Brent Fry Lewis Riddick press conference coming Luke's. Up. Top of the hour.
Yeah, here's Luke's.
Blacksburg.
Let's roll the video. Where's Luke's? Get Luke's in here. Tom, what are you doing? Come on. Let's go. What are we doing?
What are you laughing about? Come right out from break and you're starting giggling like a schoolgirl. What's going on?
Well, okay. Here we go. We're full disclosure on this show, aren't we?
Some of us are.
Okay.
Sure.
So we're sitting here talking about potential candidates for coaching jobs around the country. And our producer, yeah. Andrew Brooks, throws an obscure coaching name into my ear as we come back from break that is absolutely no chance to be the next coach at Oklahoma, and it made me laugh.
Okay, that's fair. Can we go ahead and reveal the name and throw Drew under the bus, or what are we doing here?
Sure.
Look at me.
Sure. Charlie Weiss. He said Charlie Weiss, the next coach at Oklahoma. See?
That's worth a good laugh. That's a knee slapper.
All right. Good to see you as always.
You too, guys.
Sam Hartman and Kenny Pickett now get this stage. And we talk so much about quarterbacks in this league. Look, I think Kenny Pickett deserves to go to New York. I'm not going to tell my whole Heisman ballot because that breaks the code of ethics of the Heisman Trust.
Heaven forbid.
I know. Wouldn't want to do that.
Goodness gracious.
But he deserves to go to New York. He's one of the top quarterbacks. Sam Hartman is also a really, really talented quarterback. What are the differences in these two guys, and what makes the biggest difference in their game Saturday night?
Well, I think the obvious differences are size and stature. I mean, when you get up close to Kenny Pickett, you realize how big and physical he is, whereas Sam Hartman's kind of a little bit more diminutive. You know, he was a guy that when he came out of high school was probably 180 pounds soaking wet with rocks in his pockets, and he's grown about an inch and a half, and he's obviously gained weight and bulked up. And then I think the deceptive side of Kenny Pickett is what really stands out, and that is how good of a runner he is. I bet you on his pro day, he will be sub 4.6. I really believe that. I mean, he can really, really run. Now, I say that, and that's not to say that Sam Hartman is not a good athlete. There have been six occasions this year where for Wake Forest, Sam has thrown at least three touchdowns and run for at least one touchdown in all six of those games. So he's doing something, he's creating, he's extending plays. But honestly, and I'm serious when I say this, if you wanted to, you could take Kenny Pickett and put him in a zone read-centric offense, and you could run quarterback power, you could run quarterback counter, you could run zone read, and he would be a problem as a runner.
All right, Tom, what is the missing piece of the equation in this game? We know both teams have great offenses. Both teams are coming off really good defensive performances. So what's the missing piece that determines the winner of this game Saturday night?
I believe it is the pass rush ability and the ability to disrupt Wake Forest's RPO game. Now, keep in mind, Wake Forest has given up 26 sacks on the year. There's only two other teams, I think Virginia and North Carolina, that have given up more sacks. Guess who leads the country in sacks? Pitt on defense, 46 total sacks. Go back to the first quarter of the Clemson game and look at what Clemson did to get Wake Forest off schedule, completely eliminate their RPO game and that long mesh point that we watch and we admire because it's so funky and difficult to defend for Wake Forest. I think that's the whole key component to this. How can you, if you are Pitt, manage to minimize the RPO game while putting Wake Forest in third and long situations because the pass rush overwhelms Wake up front? That's the game within the game for me. We know that there are going to be explosive plays. We know that whether it's Roberson, whether it's Addison, the quarterbacks are going to, you know, they're going to throw a lot of deep balls. Guys, look at Wake Forest. Wake Forest has 39 plays of over 30 yards. I think that's second in the country. And of those 39 plays, 32 of them are Sam Hartman completions. So you know that you're going to have to defend the explosive play on the back end. Those plays are going to be made. But when that ball's not in the air, I think it's a matter of whether Pitt can disrupt Wake Forest up front and get that RPO game, that long, slow mesh point, off schedule.
Interesting, because when you think of this game, defense, I mean, we spent a segment here this morning talking about who wins a shootout. I mean, you gotta start thinking about the back door a little bit. Like I said, I think Phil Campbell, the linebacker at Pittsburgh, might be one of the most important pieces in stopping Wake Forest because of his versatility to rush the passer and to play in coverage. Cam Bright probably falls in that category, Lugs.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to be interesting because, you know, the number one way, the most effective way to stop an RPO-based offense is the way that nobody wants to do it, and that is to play man-to-man defense. Because if you're playing man-to-man, you can't put somebody in a conflict of assignment because that player is not in no man's land. He's assigned to somebody. But if you decide to do that, now you're putting all of your back-end defenders on an island, and both of these offense can go over the top on you. So it's a pick-your-poison scenario. I think Pitt's going to have to roll the dice at times. They're going to have to take some chances, leave their guys out there, see if they can make some plays. So ultimately what it comes down to, if this thing turns into a track meet and it's back and forth, who makes that one mistake that gets their offense off the field? Who either throws an interception, mm-hmm. who fumbles, who does something to maybe get one extra stop or two extra stops that end up separating one possession from another? And if the other team that gets that ball back can capitalize, even if it's a field goal, all right, maybe that's the edge in the game if it gets down in the last 5 to 7 minutes of the fourth quarter.
Well, that's where I was going to go with you. You know, we always, when you get matchups like this with great quarterbacks and great offensive skill guys and teams that are comfortable putting a ton of points on, a lot of times it's mm-hmm. the little things we spend no time on that's the difference in the game. And don't you think that if it comes down to a kick, man, that's got to be advantage Wake Forest, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, man. The scuba diver, that's what I've nicknamed him because I think his last name's kind of cool. But yeah, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, you know, what we've seen with analytics and all of these things now that have come into play that have decisions based off of whether you're in four down territory now, right? You're starting to see all of these offenses, they get between, let's just say the plus 45 and 38. All right. Well, 2 years ago that you're punting. Now offenses are saying, okay, we're going to go ahead and if we get half of that and it ends up being fourth and two or three, we're going to go for it. And then we're just going to let our defense take the field and the percentages of weight in the offense's favor. And you have the opportunity to continue. But if for some reason you get into a decision like that, you've got to feel better about Wake's kicking game because they have more range, they have more consistency. And so, yeah, that, you know, that does make a difference. You know, whether it's Georgia, Alabama this week, whether it's Baylor, Oklahoma State, not necessarily Michigan and Iowa, because I think there's a huge discrepancy in talent there. But with Pitt and Wake, you know, oftentimes when talent is somewhat equitable across the board, it doesn't necessarily come down to the plays that are going to be made. It comes down to the mistakes that are avoided. You know, who makes the fewest amount of errors, particularly down the stretch, oftentimes ends up being the victor in the game.
Real quick here. You got anything else on the championship game? I want to change gears
here.
Whatever
you want.
All right. Brent Pry is going to be named officially the head coach at Virginia Tech. Press conference here live on ACC Network coming up top of the hour. You've had Penn State. You know kind of the logic and his systems and things like that. Obviously ties to the Beamer era, Bud Foster era. Mm-hmm. He's already put J.C. Price as an associate head coach and D-line coach. Smart move on that front. What else do we need mm-hmm. to know about this guy? And in your mind, what kind of fit do you expect? What kind of systems offensively do you think he brings to Blacksburg?
You know, it's a really good question on the offensive side of the football. I'm not sure what, you know, his overall philosophy is there. What does he believe in? What do they feel like they need to be competitive in this conference? What do they feel like they need to be to maximize not only the personnel that they currently have, but maybe offensively, that's not what they want to be in 2 to 3 years with recruiting classes in if they're recruiting a different type of player. I think the one thing that sticks out to me in all of this, and I think I've had Penn State three times with Brent Pry as their defensive coordinator. And this is not a knock on Justin Fuente, but I do think it is something that didn't help him during his time at Virginia Tech, and that is Brent Pry is going to be a little bit more of a dynamic, outgoing personality. All right? A few more smiles, a few more chuckles, a little bit more affable when dealing with people. And I think that's going to help him. I think it's going to help ease tensions a little bit. There's going to be maybe a little bit more outward enthusiasm with body language and interaction with people, whether it's at a press conference, whether it's out in public, maybe see a little more personality on the sideline, a little bit more fiery. And that might have been something that was lacking within this program. You know, we oftentimes hear that, you know, your team will take on the personality of the head coach. And, you know, maybe there's a little bit more energy and excitement that this football team needs to feed off of how the head coach conducts himself.
By the way, did you like the way the Heels played last night? I know you were watching.
Oh, my God. You should have seen me. Hey, you should have seen me. I was sitting back in my chair, and I'm doing this in the air.
No, you weren't.
Doing that in the air.
No, you weren't.
Of course
no,
I wasn't.
Weren't.
I was at dinner with my wife. Are you crazy?
No, we're going to stay on football here. All right. I do want this question. This is kind of an interesting tie to the ACC vacancies at Virginia Tech, which is filled today, and Duke, which they're currently looking for the next Blue Devil head coach. We have seen a massive turn in coaching changes and coaching hires, in part and parcel, Tom, because I keep hearing about the 85 or 88% you told us about that sign in December in these recruiting classes. Yeah. From your chair, as a guy who looks at recruiting classes and looks at players, have we got to go back and rethink this signing day because of these coaching changes? I mean, the money that's moving and the people that are – I mean, we got a guy in Brian Kelly who essentially walked off on a team that's one loss away, somebody else's loss, from getting in the college football playoff.
Yeah, you know, I don't really know how you fix it, but I'll say this. There's a lot of blame to go around. This early signing period scenario, just like NIL, just like the transfer portal, was not overly well thought out before it was implemented. Okay. It was this, here's what we're going to do. Just go out and do it. We'll deal with the consequences later. Some unintended, some unforeseen, some not so much. You knew coaches were going to be let go. You knew that money was going to continue to grow. And let's not forget, this isn't just about head coaches. This is about assistant coaches. If there's a current sitting head coach that's out there and he's got a successful program, a sustainable program, and he's recruiting, but let's just say he wants to make some tweaks and some staff changes. He's not going to do it before the early signing period. There's no way. He's going to make sure that that class is intact and ready to go before he makes any change to that staff that could impact whether or not a kid signs on December 15th. I think that's troublesome. That's been a part of the issue from the very, very beginning once this was implemented. The problem with all of this is I don't think you can put the paste back into the tube. How do you, you know, now that you have, when this was implemented, we didn't have the transfer portal as it is now. We didn't have the one-time free transfer. So now I don't think there's this feel for a need to protect players, because if a player feels like something changed after the fact, he can leave. We've given them a path to leave. So it's not like we're sitting here saying, well, we got to protect the player. But we knew this coaching stuff was going to happen. We've always known that the money was going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, which it has. I don't know if you can change it. I don't know if there's something that can be done. If you, let's just say, maybe you implement a rule that, you know, from September 1st to, let's just say, January 5th, that players are not permitted to enter into the transfer portal. So now maybe your coaches know better about what their numbers are. All right. And now all of a sudden, if you have a coaching change, you put that player and that coach in a position to where they can at least get to know one another, have a chance to maybe interact. And now the player and the coach can make a decision that's educated with gathered information. Currently, we don't have that right now. That could be a potential route. I don't know if that would be something that would be viable, but I think the transfer portal and all this with coach movement and all of it, it's all intertwined, and very little of it is positive.
My last question to you, I'm going to get back to the ACC championship game. Who do you like and why Saturday night?
I like Pitt. And I like Pitt because, this is not to diminish Sam Hartman, but the type of season that Kenny Pickett is having, it might be one of those years, guys, where it's kind of meant to be. If you go back to the decision-making process with him in the offseason, absolutely stunning Pat Narduzzi when he called him and said he was coming back because he did not expect that, to have 14 super seniors around him, have the type of season they've had, his overall consistency each and every week, particularly, and I've mentioned this to you guys, 4-minute offense, 2-minute offense, third down conversion rate, spectacular all year long. He hasn't had really any dip. And I think that consistency is what will be the little difference in the game on Saturday.
Interesting stuff. All right. Where are you headed, by the way? I know you got a title game this weekend.
Yeah, I've got Louisiana and App State. So got a departing coach in the Sun Belt heading to Florida, and App State trying to avenge that midseason loss to Louisiana and take the Sun Belt title.
That'd be a good game.
There you go. Tom, thanks as always.
Be a really good game.
Yeah, it'd be a great game.
Be back, guys.
Billy Napier's swan song for the Raging Cajuns. Tom Luganbill, always with us during the week, help us set the table. We'll be back in touch with him because of that early signing day he's talking about, by the way.
You know, it's less than 2 weeks.
I know.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Hey, it's V-Week at ESPN, and our partnership with the V-Foundation highlights the urgent need for cancer research and the elimination of racial disparities in cancer outcomes. You can learn more and help support by visiting v.org/donate. 100% of your donation goes directly to cancer research. And our pleasure to be part of it, certainly here on the ACC Network. And we welcome you back. Ben Pry is the brand new football coach at Virginia Tech. His comments with Athletics Director Whit Babcock, and I'm sure maybe President Tim Sands, top of the hour here on ACC Network.
I've never met him or spoken to him. We'll get that opportunity on Friday's show. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of curious to see how this looks and comes across.
Yeah, I'm with
you.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, interesting hire. Guy's got ties to Blacksburg. I do think Luganbill brings up an interesting point and one that was discussed among others at times, not as much publicly during the process. The personality is going to matter. The personality of Brent Pry is going to matter. I mean, it's nothing against Justin Fuente. It's just a different personality, and it's going to play a role in the way this starts at Virginia Tech.
Well, I tell you what's going to really matter. W's.
Yeah, it is. That's right. It always does.
I mean, we can
production business.
You can spin it all you want. Hey, drives a nice car, lives in a nice house. He's a nice person. But yeah, did he win this week? I mean, you better win games.
There you go.
And I think the reason you're having this press conference is Virginia Tech expects to win more games.
That's it.
And Wes, you got to start holding serve at home. We've talked about this ad nauseum for a long time. That's got to start at home. Recruiting and getting the blue chips of that state has got to start. And again, Broncos having that same conversation in Charlottesville. But you got to win, man. This is a production business.
That's it.
At the end of the day, nice personality, nice smile, good guy, bad guy, whatever. Do you win, right? You've got to win games, period.
Let's get to the night in hoops here before we get to the top of the hour. ACC went 4-2 in the half dozen ball games last night. They don't win the challenge, but made a pretty good statement on the final night, including a ball game that went 4 overtimes in Raleigh at PNC Arena. Wolfpack beat Nebraska 104-100, 4 overtimes. Darion Sebron, 39-18. That's a single-game ACC Big Ten Challenge record, by the way. Sebron had the tying points in regulation and the first overtime, scored the go-ahead points near the end of the second overtime, 14 ties, 13 lead changes in the ball game. But this young guy who Kevin Keats redshirted a couple of years ago because he felt like he had a chance to be a special player, off to a pretty good start in his third campaign on campus in Raleigh.
He looked like Plastic Man last night, man. No matter what you put in front of him, he just zips, and he can score, and he's been doing it consistently. And wasn't just last night. We've mentioned his name a number of times already in terms of a big night for Sebron for NC State. You get the win. But to me, the most impressive team in the ACC in this whole challenge over the last three nights is North Carolina.
Yeah,
I thought the Heels last night were outstanding. They beat up a really good basketball team in Michigan. They dominated. They didn't turn the ball over. Were efficient. They shot lights out in the second half.
Look at 58%. Number 2.
I'm telling you, this was a good-looking crew in light blue last night.
Yeah. Tar Heels will be in Atlanta on Sunday against Georgia Tech as conference play begins this weekend. But I don't know how Josh Pastner and Eric Reveneau and Julian Schwartz want to break this down. I'll just tell you probably ought to find a way to stop number 2. I mean, good heavens.
Well, you're going offense. The thing that impressed me the most about North Carolina
defense
was defense. Yeah. Because the last couple, listen, early in the season, it's still early. You're trying to figure out what your team's all about.
Right.
Man, defensively, what I saw last night in North Carolina, I did not see in the first couple weeks of the season. In fact, just the opposite. I saw a team that was kind of soft and wasn't going after. They went after Michigan last night and went, not tonight. I mean, you beat that team by 21. You hold them to 51 points. You're getting the job done. Really, really impressed with North Carolina last night.
Let's take you through the other winners last night. Virginia Tech beat Maryland 62-58. Hokies play with a lot of toughness, a lot of grit in the ball game. Mm-hmm. Keve Aluma, double-double with 17 and 12. Hunter Couture hit some big shots. Maryland only made 1-3 in the ball game last night. Great win for Mike Young's team to go on the road. Early statement there.
Especially after last week. Lost two tough, close games to Xavier and Memphis. They're your high-profile games.
Yeah.
Just came up a little short, not last night. They fought back, won the game on the road. That was good.
Miami got smacked by Alabama last weekend in Orlando. They go to Penn State last night and win 63-58 as well. Sam Wardenberg, 14. Cam McGusty, Charlie Moore, Isaiah Wong each had a dozen for Larranaga's Hurricanes, who welcome Clemson to Coral Gables on Saturday at noon in game one of our triple header.
Yeah, still don't know a whole lot about Miami. I'm still kind of waiting. In fact, both those teams, both Clemson and Miami, will get more answers this weekend.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.